While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and today is Thursday, the 18th of March, 2026. Now, as we move through the week, thank you for joining us for another edition of the program where we track, unpack, and make sense of the stories shaping our country and the world around us. Now, this afternoon, we'll continue to follow key developments across Namibia, from economic shifts, educational shifts and governance matters to innovation, youth development and emerging opportunities. Now, these are the issues that are not only making headlines, but also directly influencing how individuals, businesses and communities navigate their everyday lifestyles. Now, over the next 1 hour and 30 minutes, we'll take a closer look at the decisions, the trends and the events driving national progress and shaping regional dynamics. Our focus remains on providing clarity, going beyond the surface to better understand what does developments mean in practical terminology, now both now and in the near future. Well, in a fast-changing environment, staying informed is more important than ever. Through this platform, we aim to connect you with reliable information, thoughtful analysis, and meaningful conversations. Wherever you are listening from this afternoon, whether in Rudrets, in Khobabas, in Okanje, Otapi, Karasburg, Opur, or right here in Windhoek, thank you for being part of the conversation. This right here is On the Reader News Analysis on Eagle FM, keeping you informed, engaged, and connected to the issues shaping our nation. Let's get right into today's top stories. The Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture today officially inaugurated the Ketmanshoop Vocational Training Center, marking a significant milestone in Namibia's drive to strengthen technical and vocational education and training, also known as TVET. Now, the inauguration ceremony was officiated by Vice President of the Republic of Namibia, Lucia Witbooi, who arrived at the state-of-the-art facility accompanied by Minister of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, Dr. Sanet Steenkamp, at the Karas Regional Governor. Now, the event was also attended by regional and local authority leaders as well as other dignitaries, being Karas Regional Governor David Gertier and Chief Executive Officer of the Namibia Training Authority, Eric Fundula Nengwanya. I hope I got that right. Now, the newly inaugurated center situated in Ketmanshoop in the Karas region is designed to serve as a specialized hub for skills development in the energy sector. Training programs will place particular emphasis on emerging industries such as oil and gas, as well as green hydrogen, areas identified as critical for Namibia's future economic growth. Now, spanning approximately 300,000 square meters, the facility represents a major investment in expanding access to vocational education, especially in southern Namibia. Now, the project forms part of Namibia's Training Authority's broader strategy to strengthen and decentralize TVET provision across all 14 regions. Construction of the center began in 2016, reflecting a long-term commitment by government to build capacity in technical skills training. An initial $11.7 million was allocated for phase one of the project, followed by an additional $103 million earmarked for phase 1B construction, underscoring continued public investment in education infrastructure. Now, speaking at the event, the officials highlighted the importance of aligning vocational training with industry needs, but particularly as Namibia positions itself as a key player in global energy transition. Now, the center is expected to play a pivotal role in equipping young Namibians with practical skills, enhancing employability, and supporting national development priorities. The inauguration signals a renewed push to modernize the country's TVET sector, improving training quality and ensuring that Namibians' workforce is prepared to meet the demands of a rapidly evolving economy. Let's now take a listen to the Minister of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, that is Dr. Sanet Tienkam, as she spoke at the event.
I have only two tasks. I'll start straight away with the very first one, and that is to provide an overview of the project, how this project started off. I think it's important that we know where we're coming from. How did we get to this beautiful inauguration today? Therefore, I request that you allow me to provide a succinct overview of this particular project undertaken by the Ministry and the Namibia Training Authority to construct the Kitmanswoop Vocational Training Center. In doing so, I will highlight the following. First and foremost, the construction of the Kitmanswoop Vocational Training Center stands as a key achievement under our fifth National Development Plan, which mandated the Ministry of Education to expand technical and vocational education and training to all 14 regions of the Republic of Namibia. Through the implementation of the comprehensive TVET transformation and expansion strategy, this vision has been realized and significantly broadening access to technical and vocational training services across the country, including the Taras region. The strategy was informed by an extensive stakeholder consultation process involving regional leadership and ensuring that interventions were responsive to local needs and priorities. The strategy focused on both physical infrastructure development, but also program expansion. And in some regions, this was achieved through the establishment of new vocational training centers, while in others, it involved the expansion of existing state-owned centers. Notably, the Taras region is among those that since independence had no vocational training center. And the establishment of the Kitmanswoop VTC, therefore, marks a significant and historic milestone in addressing the long-standing gap and advancing equitable access to skills development opportunities. Following the acquisition of 300,000 square meters tract of land from the Kitmanswoop municipality and through several subsequent site visits, an architectural concept was developed, costed, and agreed upon. The necessary funding and technical approvals were secured, whereas consultants and contractors were appointed through a comprehensive, transparent, and competitive bidding process. The groundbreaking took place in 2016 and construction kicked off in 2017. We wish to state that the current physical infrastructure at Kitmanswoop VTC comprises of the following: a guardhouse and entrance gate, administrative building, classroom block, male and female changing rooms and ablutions, 4 state-of-the-art workshops, hostel for 140 learners, including kitchens, ablution showers, and laundry facilities, as well as a sewer treatment plant and, of course, also a water tower. Construction over the two phases were made possible through a financing facility provided by the African Development Bank. And to total, Your Excellency and esteemed Namibians, we wish to state that the total cost to date stands at 127 million 446,190 Namibian dollars and 1 cent. I had to mention the 1 cent. We're not rounding off any numbers here. The plot size offers immense potential, Your Excellency, for further expansion. As we are inaugurating this facility today, I also wish to inform the nation that construction has kicked off in earnest towards the establishment and the development of additional facilities, including a trainee tuck shop and canteen, as well as hostel supervisor accommodation facilities. In terms of further expansion over the medium to longer term, and given the availability of the required funding resources, we will definitely, as a government, consider the establishment of additional workshops and classrooms. Allow me to very briefly move towards the current course offerings. In terms of that, local engagement stood central in our approach. And through consultations with local and community stakeholders as the ultimate beneficiaries, we resulted in finding common ground in the following occupational area: water supply, sanitation and desalination from levels 1 to 5, solar equipment installation and maintenance levels 1 to 5, electrical engineering level 2 to 5, logistics and supply chain management level 2 to 5, welding and fabrication and coated welding level 4 to 5, and of course occupational health, safety and environment level 4 to 5. Further offerings are being operationalized in line with the standards of the Offshore Petroleum Industry Training Organization. This includes offering in the areas of health and safety, rigging and lifting operations, electrical, industrial for oil and gas, and mechanical maintenance for oil and gas. Allow me also at this point to say that currently the center has enrolled 253 trainees. Now, 101 are female. The future belongs to all of us, male and female. The future belongs to all of us, male and female. So I want to go over that again. 253 trainees, 152 are male, 101 are female, and we've got 31 trainees in the hostel. That, esteemed ladies and gentlemen, Your Excellency, in a nutshell, is the Keetmanshoop VTC project. Allow me to emphasize that throughout the execution of this project, the ministry and the NTA fully adhered to policy, governance, and legal requirements. Compliance has been and will continue to be a hallmark of our governance. With a construction project of this magnitude, of course, we encountered some challenges and also delays along the way. Within the context of this project, our oversight was grounded on a sound and healthy collaboration with our regional, local, and community stakeholders as the ultimate project beneficiaries, as well as a beneficial and constructive collaboration with various project implementation partners. We extend our sincere gratitude to NTA, its leadership and management. And I thank them all for their commitment and for their continued support. Ladies and gentlemen, Reverend Biva said something very profound. This technical vocational training center may equip you and open doors for you, opportunities for you, dear trainees, for a skill set. It will open the door towards skill set, but it is your character and who you are that will determine whether you stay in that room. And therefore, it's imperative that you remember, dear trainees, that soft skills are also needed in the industry, that you show up on time, that you are respectful to others, that you take ownership, that you communicate clearly, that you resolve problems and that you move into decision making that is instant after reviewing key consequences. The industry truly need people that will be able to stand firm on principles and not turn away from taking a principled stance. So we encourage you to be your true, authentic self, to work hard. We had the commitment by Mr. Binga, and I want to say that not a single trainee should be dropping out of this center. Mr. Benny Dierhardt, if we need to have dialogues and discuss with the trainees, we should do so. Please speak up if you go through hardships, but do not drop out. Ladies and gentlemen, let me move to the next part of my assignment. It gives me the greatest of honor and privilege to introduce our keynote speaker.
We have been, I think, for a very long time been speaking about TVET education and how very necessary and very important that Namibia, especially Namibia's landscape in terms of education, navigates towards TVET education, or perhaps incorporates it into how we are always talking about theoretical education. I'm talking about university education, but then there's the practical side also of TVET education, which is quite very significant and very important, which I think has been overlooked for a long time. Or I was just not given the support that it really needed. So having actually the right, having people in the education field who have been there longer and understand the needs that are needed, then understand with the gaps that need to be filled, and actually trying or doing their best to fill those gaps, I think it's worth of applause. You know how they say, when we criticize, we also need to find time to give applause where applause is necessary or it's needed. In other words, yeah. So really, the importance of TVET, I don't think, can be overemphasized. And I think we have heard really thorough discussions here with those in the TVET sector. Every now and then, it's something that I've discussed so often on the reading news analysis right here, just to talk about the importance of TVET. And I will never forget the words of Ongenga Technical College TVET Education Director, that is Elia Halfiku, Mr. Elia Halfiku. He always repeats to say that everything that you're touching and everything that you're operating with has gone through the hands of a TVET. You know, it is TVET. In other words, the mic that we are using, the computer that we are using, the mixer that we are using, the table that we are using, the phone that we are using, or the earpiece that we're using, the radio that you're listening to through, you know, if you're listening via the radio, all those is TVET related courses that people did. And for some of them, of course, it may have been also just a knowledge and curiosity, but all at the end of the day, it is a TVET. So hence why we really need to play our part in TVET. And it's really worth of applause that the Ministry of Education, and of course, even our Vice President being there to inaugurate a state of the art facility Ketman Schwab Vocational Training Center. And one thing I would want to appreciate also, the Minister of Education, Ms. Dr. Sanet Steenkamp, and how she encouraged the students not to drop out and that they should speak out. And I think I want to highlight where she says that it is your character and who you are that will determine that you stay in that classroom. So many students, a couple of students register for courses and they end up dropping out. But you know, sometimes we need to get to the bottom of it and find the root cause of why do students actually drop out of school. So it's a very good, important emphasis that a good point that she made right there, that it's that no student should be allowed to drop out, or should drop out. And if there is any challenges that they're going through, then it's always necessary for them to speak out and see how they can be helped, right? So that obviously they can finish their education and be able to contribute meaningfully, not only to their own personal lives and those of their loved ones close to them, but also to the economy, to the social economy of the country. Now, of course, let's take a listen to Vice President of Namibia speaking at the inauguration ceremony. That is Lucia Witboy.
And the most important people, I believe, today, our students and our students here, this is your chance. Grab it with both hands and make a success out of it. Key in here to reach your success is discipline. And know what you want in life. Know what you want in life as from the beginning. As it was said, it can open doors for you. The government brought this facility for the youth of the southern regions and let me put also that in the Namibia at large. Ladies and gentlemen, the media, good morning once again. I am honored to have been invited to partake in this historic and auspicious occasion, marking the inauguration of the Kate Mansworth Vocational Training Center here in the heart of the South, in Kate Mansworth. The inauguration of this center is a clear testimony to our government's unwavering commitment to ensuring that every Namibian, especially the youth, have access to quality vocational training that equips them with the relevant skills necessary for today's job market. In addition, it underscores Namibia's upward trajectory in advancing our shared national objective of expanding access to technical and vocational skills. This commitment is firmly captured under the human development and community resilience pillar of our 6th National Development Plan, NDP 6, particularly within its education and development focus area. Director of Ceremonies, our 6th National Development Plan outlines the transformation of Namibia's technical and vocational education and training sector, which remains a national priority. It emphasizes strengthening governance, improving the quality and relevance of training, expanding access to equity, and deepening collaboration between training institutions and the industry. These efforts are aimed at ensuring that our training system produces graduates whose skills respond directly to the needs of our economy. By 2030, the TVET sector aims to strengthen its responsiveness to labor market demands by increasing the proportion of graduates whose skills are aligned with the industry needs from 65% to 70%. Therefore, institutions such as the Kate Mansworth Vocational Training Center will play a critical role in promoting the national target by equipping our youth with practical, industry relevant competencies required in emerging sectors such as green hydrogen, oil and gas, and modern agriculture. Moreover, the technical and vocational education and training is also a powerful vehicle for promoting social equity, inclusion, and sustainable development. The 8th administration, under the capable leadership of Her Excellency Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwa, the President of the Republic of Namibia, continues its transformative potential in reducing unemployment and combating poverty. For this reason, as a government, we remain committed to providing the TVET sector with the necessary support and allocating the resources required for its growth. Director of Ceremonies, government has committed and resolved to construct vocational training centers in all 14 regions of Namibia as part of the national.
And now let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back to continue and listen to this interesting educational advancement news. Stay tuned. Celebrate Namibia's freedom with the best price match now at ShopRite stores. 4 kilogram real good frozen mixed chicken portions, only 199.99 Namibian dollars. 10 kilos champion super maize meal at 104.99 Namibian dollars. 3 kilograms Polana pasta, 74.99 Namibian dollars. 5 kilograms marathon white sugar, 92.99 Namibian dollars. A large tin of Ree coffee, 169.99 Namibian dollars. ShopRite, buy in bulk so you can save and enjoy this Independence weekend. Let's resume now with the Vice President, Lucia Witbooi, where she ended up speaking about how Namibia is committed, or Namibia's government is committed, to constructing or putting up TVET colleges all across all 14 regions of Namibia.
And the most important people, I believe, today, our students and our students here, this is your chance. Grab it with both hands and make a success out of it. Key in here to reach your success is discipline and know what you want in life. Know what you want in life. As from the beginning. As it was said, it can open doors for you. The government brought this facility for the youth of the southern regions and let me put also that in the Namibia at large. Ladies and gentlemen, the media, good morning once again. I am honored to have been invited to partake in this historic and auspicious occasion, marking the inauguration of the Kate Mansworth Vocational Training Center here in the heart of the South, in Kate Mansworth. The inauguration of this center is a clear testimony to our government's unwavering commitment to ensuring that every Namibian, especially the youth, have access to quality vocational training that equips them with the relevant skills necessary for today's job market. In addition, it underscores Namibia's upward trajectory in advancing our shared national objective of expanding access to technical and vocational skills. This commitment is firmly captured under the human development and community resilience pillar of our 6th National Development Plan, NDP 6, particularly within its education and development focus area. Director of Ceremonies, our 6th National Development Plan outlines the transformation of Namibia's technical and vocational education and training sector, which remains a national priority. It emphasizes strengthening governance, improving the quality and relevance of training, expanding access to equity, and deepening collaboration between training institutions and the industry. These efforts are aimed at ensuring that our training system produces graduates whose skills respond directly to the needs of our economy. By 2030, the TVET sector aims to strengthen its responsiveness to labor market demands by increasing the proportion of graduates whose skills are aligned with the industry needs from 65% to 70%. Therefore, institutions such as the Keetmanshoop Vocational Training Center will play a critical role in promoting the national target by equipping our youth with practical, industry-relevant competencies required in emerging sectors such as green hydrogen, oil and gas, and modern agriculture. Moreover, the technical and vocational education and training is also a powerful vehicle for promoting social equity, inclusion, and sustainable development. The 8th Administration, under the capable leadership of Her Excellency Dr. Netumbo Nandi Ndaitwa, the President of the Republic of Namibia, continues its transformative potential in reducing unemployment and combating poverty. For this reason, as a government, we remain committed to providing the TVET sector with the necessary support and allocating the resources required for its growth. Director of Ceremonies, government has committed and resolved to construct vocational training centers in all 14 regions of Namibia as part of the national TVET sector transformation and expansion strategy. Therefore, today, the Karas region becomes the 12th region to house its own government vocational training center. Thank you. The establishment of the Keetmanshoop Vocational Center is well positioned to expand access to quality and equitable training opportunities for the people of the Karas region and beyond. Its establishment stands as a testament that our government remains firmly committed to building a vibrant and responsible national TVET sector. It also underscores the value we place on developing technical and vocational skills as a cornerstone of national building. Allow me to commend the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, the Namibia Training Authority, and all our stakeholders and partners for achieving this important milestone. Notwithstanding this upward trajectory, our work to sustain the transformation and revitalization of Namibia's TVET system must continue constantly. The TVET sector is evolving rapidly, and the demand for technical and vocational skills continue to grow across many established industries. At the same time, new skills demands are emerging from major macroeconomic development initiatives, most notably in the green hydrogen and oil and gas sectors. We must keep pace with these evolving needs, and we must do so in a manner that maximizes impact while unlocking an opportunity for our people. Director of Ceremonies, vocational training centers have a critical role to play in this regard. Individually and collectively, these public institutions must supply our economy with the technical and vocational expertise required to advance the microeconomic development objectives we have set for ourselves as a country. The Kitmanswap Vocational Training Center is strategically positioned to develop these critical skills for the emerging green hydrogen in the oil and gas sector. This positioning carries with it a profound responsibility. There are also strong expectations that this center will align its programs in a manner that supports the development of local TVET skills required for the Karas region's ambitious plans to develop more than 2,000 hectares of irrigation projects at the Nekerdal Dam. This is an important national project with the potential to add significant value to both the regional and the national economy. With these sectors soon entering critical phases of field development and production, the entire TVET value chain must be ready. This state-of-the-art facility ultimately belongs to the people of Namibia. The services it will provide are intended to equip our youth with the knowledge and practical skills they require, not only to succeed in today's job market, but also to thrive in a rapidly changing global economy. This facility exists to serve them, the youth who represents the future and hope for our nation. We must empower them, strengthen their capabilities, and prepare them to become leaders and productive contributors within their communities in the broader national economy. I therefore call upon the community of Kitmanswap and the people of the Karas region at large to embrace this institution, to take full ownership of it, and to support its continued growth and success. I make the same appeal to the political, to the traditional, and our religious leaders present today. I also call upon our local and national industry partners and employers to collaborate with this center in a spirit of purposeful partnership, one grounded in cooperation and a shared commitment to skills excellence. Once again, I would like to express my gratitude to all the stakeholders who played a role in making this vision a reality, from government officials to our community leaders and our educators. Let us celebrate this historic occasion as we embark on a new chapter in vocational education in the Karas region, building a prosperous future for all Namibians through education and skills development.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no, why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the Mimi with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life you just get squeezed. But luckily with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. This is on the Reading News Analysis. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kudite okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito da njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda beli nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, dora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu watatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. In other news, the ongoing dialogue on acceleration development in the Erongo region gained further momentum during a recent four-quarter performance review meeting where key stakeholders assessed progress, challenges and priorities across critical sectors. Now, among the notable presentations was an update from Mr. Rudolf Stefanos of the Ministry of Works and Transport, delivered under the auspices of the Erongo Regional Council. His report focused on the outcomes of technical inspections and outlined maintenance activities carried out across government infrastructure and transport assets in the region. Stefanos highlighted that while inspection targets were largely met, the effectiveness of maintenance efforts continues to be constrained by an aging fleet of vehicles and equipment. Many of these assets, he noted, are operating beyond their intended service life, resulting in frequent breakdowns, increased maintenance costs, and delays in service delivery. Let's now take a listen to Mr. Rudolf Stefanos.
Rudolf Stefanos, I'm the Chief Work Inspector, Minister of Works, based in Swakopmund. So I'm going to take you through our four-quarter review. Our first output is on supervisions, on renovations on government buildings. Our target was 5 for the quarter. However, we received more projects and we actually achieved 20. So the output is not in our control. Most 3 projects are coming from 9 ministries. They have the budget, so. And not we have done the cost estimates in previous years, they were only able to implement them now during this quarter. We had a challenge, even though we have achieved 100%, more than that, lack of transport due to breakdown. Our freight is very old. So we request for new vehicles. That's our interventions. Moving on into the new financial year. Our second output is on new constructions. We still supervise new construction. We target 5. However, we are able to achieve 10. It's the same with the first output. It's not in our control since we don't have a budget, so as we only do supervisions. Like ministries have the maintenance budgets. So what we do here, we normally just do supervisions. Most of the projects are coming from the Ministry of Education. They are building new schools. They are building new toilets, ablutions. And few from Ministry of Health. Our next output is on service requests from OMAS. What we do is we attend to service requests from OMAS. Then we issue them to the responsible unit for implementations, provide feedback, and then we report the expenditure and QRs on those daily maintenance. So what we plan to achieve is that all the service requests that are coming in, we plan to attend to them at 100%. So, and that's what we have done. We have 100% achievement on that also. Our next output is on fixed assets. This activity, we did not plan anything for this quarter. It's mostly carried out during the first quarter. Just for verification of tenants who are in government buildings. Our next output is on the PA signed. We have 77 staff members, however 66 were able to sign. During the time we were signing, 11 staff members were on leave, however they will sign by the end of this quarter. Yeah, so we don't have any challenge. People will sign by the end of this quarter, hopefully by the end of the month, everyone will be signing their fee and submitted as such. The next output is on the movable assets managed, fiscal accounting and verifications against the intent of the stock taking. We got it one and we have achieved one. No challenge, we got it. On the next output is the budget, planned and controlled, allocate of funds to specific goals, and update commitment register, will consider expenditure against expenditure. We target three, two were achieved. However, we are still in the middle of the third month. If the plan, the review could have happened by the end of the month, it would have three. So we have no challenge. This item will be achieved, will achieve 100% by the end of the month. It's the same with the next output, which is on the monthly report submitted. So we'll only be able to submit our reports by the end of the month. The procurement executed is our next output, and last on our plan, we have achieved our target was to achieve 100% on whatever we want to procure. However, we were able to achieve 90%. I believe there are a few outstanding bits that are with PC. We did not put any challenge. I've seen most of our stakeholders when you reported that procurement is a big challenge on PC and all that. Yeah. I think we can take that challenge from others. Yeah. So that's the end of our review.
And for now, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. When we do return, we'll be back with economic indicators. Thereafter, news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Hairi, Nola Natu, Hairi Bali, No Hair, Ileco, Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Matatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for news beyond the border of Tanamibia. But before we get to that specifically, let's get into economic indicators. 1 US dollar today is equal to 16.80 Namibian dollars, and 1 Australian dollar is equal to 11 Namibian dollars and 82 cents. 1 pound sterling is equal to 22 Namibian dollars and 32 cents. 1 euro is equal to 19 Namibian dollars point 27 cents. 1 United Arab Emirates dirham is equal to 4 Namibian dollars and 57 cents. And 1 Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 23 scenes. And now for a scheduled commercial break.
Efiloshisho otali kulandula kona ave wayuka. Ekwashilipale kolo maruendo paiwano kupitila mo NHP. O atukwatele komesho ekwashilipale kola fika mafio pedola emiliona omlongo da Namibia. Moshi joshe tukeshe kuyanja omakwafo unamiti enashane filoshisho lopa ulumo mumbu. Kwa avoveli ponjeo shilongo, shijoshi topo rwasho ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe banando ishoshe layash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis moule o minute disyonailela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya moruendo. Ponjeo shilongo. E mangono malandula fano, odo dino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP will about you.
And often news to be on the borders of Namibia, South Africa is set to face a severe industrial gas shortage by 2028. Let's take a listen to that.
Now, South Africa will face a severe, industrial gas shortage by 2028. That's according to Professor Craig McGregor, who is, of course, Professor in Mechanical and Mechatronic Engineering at Stellenbosch University. Now, this will threaten 70,000 jobs potentially, also economic output and manufacturing. The crisis stems from depleting Mozambican gas fields, leading to warnings of rapid deindustrialization in provinces like Mpumalanga, Gauteng, and KwaZulu-Natal. But for more on this matter, we're joined virtually now by Professor Craig McGregor. Professor McGregor, thanks so much for your time and welcome to Morning Live.
Thank you for inviting me, Selina.
So, as you have asserted, we are potentially facing a gas cliff come 2028. But in your view, you know, what is going to give rise to that? How soon? And just how real is that threat right now?
So we've known about this for a long time. It's been an issue with our supply that's been running from Mozambique through supplying industrial gas to our heartland. And those fields are now 2 decades old, and they're just depleting, so there's no gas left in them. So as that gas disappears, we need to replace it with other sources. So that's the challenge we face. Unfortunately, all our options come at a much higher price.
So if we look at those ramifications, Professor McGregor, what are they for ordinary South Africans to understand exactly what we are facing?
So obviously there's the jobs, as you mentioned, 70,000 direct jobs. There's attached to that all the associated jobs that get employed. We're talking about industries like glass manufacture, steels, a lot of our our food manufacture and our beverages all use gases and natural gas as an energy source to do anything from sterilizing bottles through to melting the glass when we making our windows.
So it's 2026. You say that this cliff may be reached, this gas cliff in 2028. So what can we potentially do to actually avoid this or at least mitigate for what's to come?
So Sasol's approached the energy regulator, NERSA, for to supply a replacement gas that comes from their Secunda facility, but that will only happen to 2030 or so. After that, we need to bring in import alternative energy sources. We're proposing the import of propane. That's the same gas as you have in your KDAC gas cylinder. So everybody should be familiar with it from their braais or using it at home for cooking.
And then where would we import that from? And how is this current situation likely to impact on price? Because that, of course, is a worry for many South Africans across the energy spectrum, not just natural gas, but we're looking at what's happening in the Gulf with regard to Brent crude oil as well. So it's quite a serious one.
This is a very serious situation that we're facing, and we need some urgent attention to this. Time is running out for us to deal with the situation. Obviously, in the short term, with everything happening in the Gulf Coast, prices will go up, but that should hopefully be sorted out in the next weeks or months. But after that, we need to find suitable and affordable energy sources to run our industries in the country.
And who would we look to? Where would we look to, Prof?
These come. You can get natural gas or propane gas from any of the big natural gas. The petroleum exporters. So the United States is a big exporter. There's the Middle East, obviously, the Gulf Coast, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, obviously Iran is affected at the moment. Australia and Indonesia are also big gas exporters.
So, Prof, as you say, we've been aware of this for a number of years now. So looking at the situation and where we find ourselves right now, where it's becoming more and more urgent and the situation is serious, as you say, the question has to be asked about why there hasn't been any urgency on the part of government to deal with this matter and deal with it decisively, despite the warnings that have been sounded.
Yeah, it's very hard to understand why this isn't being taken more seriously. The minister recently in his speech did say that they were looking to find solutions for this and look at options. Unfortunately, it's the same message that we've heard for the last 5 years, and there's nothing concrete in the plan other than saying that they're taking it seriously and looking for solutions.
And we know we've come from the electricity crisis, so this raises a question about a lack of planning, overall, and it's certainly something that needs to be addressed.
Very much so. I can only agree with that statement. So I'm hoping that the nice thing is, as you showed in your videos, is that's an energy source we're already importing into the country. We have import facilities in Richards Bay as well as in Saldanha, and so we have on the east and the west coast. So those are facilities and a network that we can expand on and continue to grow. All the other options take a lot of money to invest, and that is something that business is very reluctant to do given the uncertainty in how many customers they'll have to serve, and you know, as with the price shocks you've seen, that makes investing very difficult.
And we saw early in March, Professor McGregor, Minister of Minerals and Petroleum Resources, Gwedema.
Meanwhile, live golf is breaking new ground on African continent.
Now, there's a brand new event this week on the LIV Golf calendar as the league stars head below the equator for the inaugural LIV Golf South Africa. Now, it's the first time that a LIV event will be played on African soil, and golf fans are expected to come out in big numbers this week. Now, my colleague Stacey Holland, in the lead up to today's start, has gone to the venue at Steyn City out in the northern suburbs of Johannesburg to speak to some of the people who will be playing an important role in this tournament.
Well, a very good morning to you. LIV Golf has finally arrived in South Africa. It makes its African debut. It's quite an historic occasion, in fact, because it really is the first time that we have a tournament of this nature, of the size, coming to South African soils. And obviously, the local spotlight is set firmly, or should I say the sunshine is set firmly on the Southern Guards, comprised of Captain Louis Oosthuizen, and we have Charles Schwartzel, we have Dean Burmester, and we also have Brandon Grace with us. Speaking about Dean, you'll recognize his face because he's been on the show when we spoke about him at a previous tournament. And so he's standing just to my right. We're going to talk about what it means to be performing, not just a professional performance on South African soil, but this is something that's close to you personally, eh, Dean?
Yeah, this is obviously very, very special. I think it's taken a lot of work and a lot of effort, and I think some tears shed and some smiles. And here we are, 2026, you know, late March, and the tournament's here, and we've sold an unbelievable amount of tickets. You know, the fans are behind us, and everybody involved in the golf course and everything has put on an unbelievable show. It should be one of the greatest weeks in South African golf.
We spoke about this, that it's so important for these format changes to become innovative, to attract younger audiences, and we're starting to see that. It's making the game of golf really exciting as well. Just give those viewers that still don't understand the difference between a LIV Golf format and what they perhaps are used to, or perhaps what they've seen, just give them a sense of why it's so exciting.
Yeah, it's obviously, look, the main thing is it's the shotgun start. I think everybody's on the golf course at the same time. So 57 players playing golf at the same time. Lasts about 4.5 to 4 hours, 45 minutes. And then after that, obviously, we've got, you know, some entertainment factors to that with some great concerts and artists and things after that. But from a golf perspective, having all 57 guys on the golf course at one time, I think that's exciting. You can kind of park off on one hole and you get to see everybody come past. You know, the old format of golf, or the general format of golf, you know, you have early morning tee time. Some guys are off at 6:40 in the morning. Other guys are off at 2:30 in the afternoon, and you know, having a long day like that of different tee boxes and things like that can be tough to watch and tough to view. And I think from a fan perspective, I think it's really, really cool that you get to see 57 of the greatest players in the world on the golf course in the same conditions at the same time.
I heard you talking about the format change from 54 to 72 and the benefits thereof. I think that format change is going to be exciting for fans as well. But talk to us from a golfer's perspective why you think it's a move in the right direction.
Yeah, I think for us it's really cool. It gives you more time. Yeah. You get to kind of feel your way into a tournament, whereas 54 holes kind of felt like a sprint. And now we, if I can use a Formula One analogy, I think we have a whole Grand Prix. So you've got enough time to kind of get yourself into the tournament and feel it out and find out, you know, whether the golf course suits you or where your game's at, and then you can, you know, attack it from there. So I think, you know, that kind of plays into my favor a little bit. I'm generally a bit of a slow starter, so I'm enjoying the four rounds for sure.
Does it not take away from what we expected LIV to be? Is it almost a little bit inching towards what we knew golf to be?
I think LIV has still got its own identity. I think with everybody on the shotgun start, all on the golf course together, I think it's the massive entertainment factor, you know, with the music on the golf course. I think it's just a great fan experience. I think from a TV viewership as well, I think you don't have to, you know, watch at the middle of the night and all the way through till early hours in the morning in a South African when we're playing in America, you just kind of get that 4.5 hours. You get to watch that block window and see everybody play and support your favorites.
From a player's perspective, preparing for your normal tee-off time versus a shotgun start, is there anything that you find different or not really?
I get a little bit more of a lion, so that's great. I think, I generally don't tee off too early anymore, so that's really nice. I think all four of us really enjoy that from our team perspective. So it's nice to kind of have that time, especially when your family's around. You get to see the kids, have breakfast with them in the morning. Whereas if you had a, 7 a.m. tee time, whatever it is, you wouldn't have that. You're in the physio kind of 4:30, 5 o'clock already. So, from that perspective and a player perspective, it's amazing.
I know that you've had some input. The LIV Golf team asked you to give some input into the course. What have you prepared? You were talking about the rough and the greens earlier on. What do you want the players to experience from Stain City?
I think, weather obviously in Johannesburg has been wet of late, so it is a bit soft, but that's helped the rough grow. And that's what Louis wanted, especially Louis. He said, we need to, make it a bit of a test for the guys because it is a long, wide golf course, and he doesn't want, to take out 30% of the field. He wants everybody to have a chance to win this event, and I think that's great. So he's grown the Kikuyu grass, which is a tough grass that guys don't normally play all over the world, to, I think it's like 100 centimeters or something like that, and they're trimming it off. So that'll make the ball kind of lie down and go right to the bottom. It's going to be a test. If you miss fairways, it's going to be a hard week.
Okay, and then just before I let you go, I know you've been traveling a lot. Just give us a sense about how you've been handling that. And then what the Southern Guards have been, how you guys are feeling as you lead the charge for the South African contingent.
I think we're all so excited. I think when Thursday comes around, there's going to be a lot of adrenaline, and that's going to pull us through the 4 days. There has been a lot of travel, but so has everybody else. Everybody in the league has traveled just as fast. So I think we're on an even playing field with everybody, and we know the conditions, we know the altitude and things like that. So hopefully we can use that in our favor.
Thank you so much for chatting to us. We're wishing you all the best for the week.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me again.
So as we've been chatting to Dean Burmester, he forms part of the Southern Guards contingent, the South African contingent here at LIV Golf. Just talking about the preparations ahead of...
Nigeria loses $21 million daily as oil output falls below OPEC target.
OPEC member states have a 1.5 million barrels per day production quota, but Nigeria has remained below that mark for months. Latest data from the Nigerian Upstream Petroleum Regulatory Commission shows output averaging 1.42 to 1.45 million barrels per day, still short of target. With crude prices now above $100 per barrel and rising due to the US-Israel onslaught on Iran, the missed opportunity stands to significantly cut potential revenues, adding pressure on budget financing and foreign exchange reserves.
That translates to about 40,000 to 60,000 shortfall per day. And if you consider that, it shows that not only are we losing, not being able to meet up with our OPEC quota, it's also showing that we are losing revenue and puts us in a very precarious position. And that's why Nigeria keeps borrowing.
Oil and gas remains central to Nigeria's public finances. Data from the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative shows the sector accounts for about 65% of government revenue and more than 85% of export earnings. That makes output performance critical to budget execution and foreign exchange stability.
It means a lot for our reserve, but most especially because of the forex. I mean, the bulk, close to 80-something percent of the forex we get are actually from the oil and gas sector. So what that does is that when you have a less inflow from GDC, it affects your foreign oil reserve. I mean, it affects your foreign exchange reserve. And when that is low, it actually affects your currency.
Fiscal pressure could intensify if the trend continues, forcing difficult financing choices for the government.
We have a weak governance system. Even though we have the Petroleum Industry Act that took us almost two decades to have, there are some components of the Petroleum Industry Bill that we are not following up. It's more like having the law but not following up with implementation.
It does, especially to increase borrowing. But what it does is that you already have projections. I mean, revenue projection that you use to support your annual budget. So when you don't have that projection, where you don't have money actually to support your budget, what it means, you tend to look at both internal and external borrowing to cushion the effect.
Every barrel Nigeria fails to produce widens the pressure on public finances. With the 2026 budget built on strong oil revenue assumptions, persistent output gaps could complicate spending plans and currency management in Africa's largest economy. Experts say operational setbacks from infrastructure limits to policy implementation must be addressed to close the gap and prevent further losses. Kelechi Emekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
Meanwhile, people say people feel abandoned fighting rages in eastern Congo despite the U.S. peace deal.
Geopolitical, historical, but above all economic, with the mining of Congolese resources. With us is Disma Katenge-Senga, based in Kisangani in northeastern DRC. He's the president of Group Lotus for the Defense of Human Rights. First, let's take a brief look at the situation on the ground. Since the resurgence of the AFC M23 movement, it's taken and now controls several towns and villages. What does daily life look like for a Congolese citizen? You were telling us earlier during the forum that a Congolese person in Bukavu who wants to go to Kinshasa has to go through Rwanda.
Yes, exactly. The movement of people has become very difficult because there is no longer any direct transport or communication between the East and the West. So people who are under the areas occupied by the N23 and FC and also the Rwandan troops, for them to get out, they are forced to go through Rwanda. So communication and movement of people between the East and the West is already complicated. Daily life is also complicated for the population, since civil servants in the occupied areas do not receive their salaries, so they are struggling to survive. This war situation has also left them unemployed. The movement of goods and people is also greatly reduced and subject to certain conditions, to also certain constraints that have emerged, such as having to pass through two or three countries before reaching the West.
We thought that with all the agreements that have been signed, starting with the Washington Agreement between Rwanda and our country, the Democratic Republic of Congo, this will immediately put an end at least at the ceasefire stage so that the ceasefire will be respected. Yet, in the reality, we are living on the ground. The ceasefire is not respected. There has been a resumption of fighting between the two sides. What we're also seeing on the ground is even an attempt to further extend the crisis with clashes in other regions that were not previously affected, and that is what worries us the most.
That was my next question regarding the population. How do they feel after the signing of this agreement, which ultimately is an agreement with a condition? It's still about mineral resources.
What the Congolese population wants, for example, is that this Washington Agreement, which allows Americans and American companies to come and exploit Congo's wealth, should genuinely benefit Congolese people, that daily life should improve, meaning that people's living conditions and standards of living should get better, and that people should truly feel that their resources are bringing a change in their lives. Rwanda has largely profited from our resources by looting them through this war, by illegally exploiting our resources. But what the population does not understand and finds hard to accept is that this same Rwanda, within the framework of regional cooperation promoted by the Washington agreements, is again one of the parties to the agreement that will benefit from Congo's wealth.
We saw that 6 days after the signing of this agreement, Paul Kagame ordered an offensive on Uvira. The United States sanctioned the Rwandan army, and there was a partial withdrawal. Will these financial sanctions on the Rwandan army be enough to stop them from advancing?
We can say that the sanctions helped to some extent. We can't deny that. Because if today the Rwandan army and the M23 have withdrawn from Uvira, it is because of those sanctions.
because of that American pressure. The sanctions need to be stepped up. We must ensure that we truly obtain the withdrawal of all Rwandan troops from the DRC, and that is also the objective of the agreement that peace returns. We need international support that would involve not only the United States, but also other countries, for example, at the African regional level, and also at the international level, such as European countries.
This conflict, which was originally community-based, is now entangled around mining exploitation. How do we break this chain of mining exploitation today? What would be the solution?
In my view, we need to act on four fronts. The first is establishment of democratic regimes in the region. Today, we have the Democratic Republic of Congo, which has made efforts in terms of democracy, but it is a democratic process that is not yet complete.
And now for some international news, dozens of stranded vessels are outside the Strait of Hormuz.
Now let's bring in journalist Inzamam Rashid, who is live for us, overlooking the Strait of Hormuz. This is also a major factor here that's driving up energy prices. There have been multiple attacks this morning.
Yeah, that's right. Look, it isn't just the attacks overnight at some of those energy sites across the Gulf that is rising up oil prices. It is, in fact, what's happening here on the waters behind me on the Strait of Hormuz, where Iran has had de facto control over these waters militarily for the last few weeks, not allowing many ships to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. Usually around 20% of the world's oil passes through here. Instead, what they've been doing is they've inciting fear on many of the ships that are now parked up, anchored down in these waters behind me. To my left, there are dozens and dozens in the Gulf of Oman, if not hundreds, where you can see at nighttime with their lights on, just sat waiting for some form of green light to pass through this now very dangerous and perilous waterway. And it is dangerous and perilous because Iran continues to attack vessels overnight. Yes, again, we saw a vessel just off the coast of Fort Khorfakkan, just a few kilometers down from where I am at the entrance of the Strait of Hormuz. There was a vessel that was attacked there. A missile had hit there, and that vessel was alight and burning for most of the night. And then just off the coast of Ras Laffan, where, of course, we saw that huge attack by Iran on Qatar's energy infrastructure there, it seemed that a vessel off that coast also had been struck late last night as well, meaning that waters in these areas, particularly around the Strait of Hormuz, still remain very unsafe. I think that this is now very much not just a military war that we're seeing in this region. It's very much an energy and an economic war as well. And a lot of that is being fueled by the activity here on the Strait of Hormuz. We know that in the last 24 hours, the US targeted Iranian missile sites just around 50 miles in that direction on the coast of Iran, where Iran has been using those sites to target vessels in these waters. It would also use those sites if there was any suggestion of US Navy vessels or even European Navy vessels escorting some of these ships and oil tankers through the Strait of Hormuz. Now, the US forces said that they targeted those sites with bunker-busting bombs. We have no idea whether that caused any damage, whether those sites are still available to work. But clearly, with an attack just not far from where we are and not far from the Iranian coast, there was a missile attack there suggesting that an attack could have come close from one of those sites that it seems that the US potentially targeted. But clearly, this is still very much a quiet waterway right now, still many boats and vessels parked up waiting to pass through. And those hike in oil prices that we are seeing, the highest since June 2022, that's happening because of this strategic waterway remaining shut.
Inzamam Rashid, we appreciate your reporting from the Strait of Hormuz. Thank you.
Meanwhile, gas prices in the UK and Europe soar after strikes on energy facilities in Qatar and Iran.
The price of gas in Europe is more than double the level seen before the conflict began. Well, let's now cross live and talk about this country's response to the war. Let's talk to José Manuel Álvarez Bueno, the Foreign Minister of Spain. Thank you so much for joining us on the program, Minister. And can I ask you, first of all, for your reaction to the escalation that we've seen overnight, both with that Israeli attack on the Pass oil field, but also the retaliation and the subsequent rises in those energy prices?
We condemn, of course, all those attacks, both from Israel and from Iran, to those energy facilities. They are incredibly dangerous, both for human life, for the environment, and we have seen already the tremendous impact on the prices of energy. This is damaging the well-being of our citizens. This is a war on which Europe was neither consulted nor informed, but we are seeing that we are being hit by the consequences. And therefore, as Spain did since the very first day of this unilateral action, we call for de-escalation, we call for diplomacy, and we call for going back to the negotiating table.
Let's talk a little bit about the fact that you just said there Europe was hasn't been involved in this war, hasn't known about how it started. But are you surprised that President Trump has said on Truth Social that he knew nothing about the Israeli strike on those oil fields, given that the Israelis and the Americans have gone into this war together? Did that surprise you, reading that?
I understand that they have different objectives right now in the war, Israel and the United States. But what's important is that those that initiated this war realizes that it's out of control, that we don't see very clear how long this can take, what are the objectives of this war, and it's putting in danger the lives of millions of people, that it has destabilized completely the Middle East. We see places like Lebanon, 1 million displaced people. It's a real shame for humanity, and that the impact for the well-being of everyone on Earth is being put in danger, certainly for the well-being of Spaniards and European citizens. And therefore, there is no military solution for the current situation. De-escalation, once again, going back to the negotiating table, that's the only solution. At the end, security never comes only through military force.
There's a hot war happening.
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Reading News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Ongona Nadingi program, brought to you by Lois Eshimi. And of course, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30, and the Business Economic segment with David Chombe from 1800 Hours. From Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow. Same time, same place.